Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Well, you can knock me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place. Well, do anything that you want to do, but not, honey, lay off them shoes. And don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoes. Let's go, cat! Burn my house, steal my car, drink my liquor from an old fruit jar. Well, do anything that you wanna do, but honey, lay off of my shoes. And don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Rock it! For the money, two for the show, three to get ready, now go, 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 but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe.
Hello.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, now.
Now, wait a minute, Elvis, we're on now. Welcome, everyone, to the Judy Joy Jones Show. Hope you're having a great evening. We're going to have a great time tonight. Obviously, you know who's saying that or who is singing that. Elvis Presley, Blue Suede Shoes. And our show tonight is all about the king himself, Elvis Presley. And I want to welcome everyone, especially we have remarkably found some experts in the world that have most of the facts and figures about Elvis, his life. You know, you hear a lot of rumors, but what we want to know is the truth. And these two guys, they have it. And we're going to bring them up in just a minute. I'm going to introduce them, and I'm really honored to have them both. And our very special co-host tonight, I call her our VIP co-host, her name is Miss Rita Graham, and Rita was, she actually was a Raylette of the great legend Ray Charles, and he made her first album called Rita Graham Vibrations. So anyway, I'm going to bring her up in just a second. First, I'd like to tell everyone that on Wednesday night, we're going to have William Beecher, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Acorn Dossier. And William Beecher is a Washington reporter for many, many, many years. He actually was a correspondent for the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. He's in Who's Who of America and Who's Who of the World. And I am so looking forward to him. His publisher is Daily Swan Publishing Company. So that is on Wednesday night. And then on Friday night, we're going to have one of my favorite people on earth, Danyon Brinkley, and his wife, Catherine. Danyon wrote a book called, Beyond the Light. I don't have his information right before me, but Danyon Brinkley was struck by lightning three times, but the first time he was declared dead, 30, 40, 50 minutes. And what he has done since then is remarkable in that he started an organization called VIP, Very Important Persons, and Danyon goes around and sits at the deathbed of all the veterans, the VA, the people that don't have a family. He sits there, holds their hands, and helps them cross over to the other side. Because he's been there, he's going to tell us all about it. And I'm looking forward to him. And let's go ahead and bring up Rita. Hello, Rita.
Hi. I was just saying that Daniel Brinkley's book, I get it mixed up because Betty Eady's book was, I think, Saved by the Light.
That's it, but, yeah.
And Daniel Brinkley's book is Embraced by the Light, or it could be vice
versa. Thank you, Rita.
I might have it backwards. But it was
no,
like,
I think you got it just right.
It was a telemovie with Eric Roberts, Julia Roberts' brother.
Oh.
Played Daniel Brinkley in the television movie.
So you remember it well. It was quite moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing. You know, out of all the people, I think Daniel is quite sincere when he, you know, whatever he said. I heard him speak once, and he kind of looked at everybody, and he said, "You cannot fail. Whatever you do on earth, you've done it right. You are perfect, and you just hug each other." And I thought, wow, what a guy.
He was electrocuted. He was struck by lightning several times, but the first time his shoes, the nails in his shoes were melted.
Oh.
Nailed the shoes, the metal melted to the floor, and the shoes had to be surgically removed.
I didn't know.
Yeah. He was extremely debilitated by his near-death experiences because he had been declared dead,
mm-hmm.
and then when he finally did come back and he had this marvelous experience, he had terrible eyesight and he was unable to walk unaided. So he was walking with, I think, two cane crutches or something.
Uh-huh.
But by that time, well, he'll tell the story. I mean,
when he comes on. Yeah, what
really
a story. He's touched so many lives, yeah. Rita, I'm so happy to have you here. I know that you're going to be, actually, I'll just give a little preview that Rita and I are doing a show together, and we are going to do her album. We're going to put the whole album on the show, and it's called Rita Graham Live at Sambuca, and that's in Atlanta, Georgia. What is Sambuca?
Well, there are five of them around the country.
Sambuca
is a liqueur with two little coffee beans. And they put it in your glass, I guess, that's so you won't get completely and totally stoned.
Oh.
But there's Sambuca in, I think it began in Dallas. And there's one in Houston, one in Nashville, and one in Denver, and then the Atlanta store. And they quickly changed it into a venue. I was the Sunday night band.
Uh-huh.
From May of 99 up until just 2 months ago. So they started selling the nights off to various promoters. And
oh.
Yeah, they had I think it was the Capitol Records had somebody there promoting. Last Tuesday night they had a listening party for her new CD, whoever. So they don't really, pay their acts like it's a wonderful venue. It's seats 400, and it's right in the heart of the Buckhead area of Atlanta, very upscale area, and the white tablecloths and $30 entrees, and it's a great place.
You've been there a while. And Rita, I want to tell everyone that you actually were one of the Ray Charles, the legend, great genius Ray Charles, Raylette. And he actually made your first album. You were like 21 years old.
Yeah, well, I was amazed because I remain the only Raylette single artist that he produced a major recording project for on his label.
Wow.
It was his idea and his whole thing. So then I was a Raylette for just a few months after that because all the Raylettes walked out. I guess they've been with him for years, and I guess that was the straw that finally.
That was what. Yeah, well, Ray Charles, being the genius he was, he had a lot of appetite for a lot of different things, and I know that. But for him to make your album, I'm really looking forward to our show, and that should be probably next week sometime. We haven't got the date and time set, but we're going to let you know. And we're going to have the whole Rita Graham live at Samoka Restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to have that live. Tonight, we actually welcome back, because we had him before, Patrick Lacey, who is an Elvis Presley expert. He wrote a book called Myth and Legend, Elvis Decoded. And Elvis Decoded, A Fan's Guide to Deciphering the Myths and Misinformation. And that book is an in-depth examination of facts permeating other Elvis books and articles. And I actually heard Patrick first, which is why I got him on my show, on Coast to Coast, which is a very, very well-known show started by Art Bell. And we're going to have him come on and answer any questions that we all might have, and also talk to us a little bit about what he does know about Elvis Presley, which is amazing. And also we have Corey Cooper, and he is an Elvis Presley expert. Corey, his friends include contacts in the Elvis world, which are members of the Memphis Mafia, the close group of friends and employees that worked with and protected Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll. Now, I'm not real sure what his role was, but we're going to find out tonight what Corey did. And I cannot wait, and I want to tell everyone, please do call in if you have any questions. The call-in number is 646-929-1344, and we have the chat room going. So if anybody has any questions whatsoever they want to ask, they don't want to call in, they just want to ask, I will be happy to pass them on. I am going to bring up 775. I don't know which one of these two guys it is, but let's bring them up. Hello?
Hi, this is Corey.
Hi, Corey. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me back. It's great to be on the show again.
Welcome. We had some problems when you were first on. We had a little tech difficulty, but Blog Talk Radio has got that all worked out. I'm so happy you came back. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be on again, and it's nice to be on with Miss Rita Graham. How nice is that?
About the best you're going to get.
You know what's fascinating about it is that, she also worked with Mike Post, and anybody who's a fan of television has heard Mike Post's work over the years. I mean, from Hill Street Blues, The Rockford Files, The A-Team, Magnum P.I., I mean, he did just about every television soundtrack to shows that you've heard, and so it's very interesting to me. So it's nice to meet you over the phone.
Well, hi, Corey, and thank you. Same here. I was with Mike for 3 years, and we were signed to a label that was a forerunner of Arista Records, and unfortunately we didn't get anything that we got out to the public a big time, but we made some great records. There was some wonderful stuff over there. I'd love to see some of that stuff revitalized, because Mike made great records.
You know, Corey, I would love for you to tell us, what exactly was your role with Elvis Presley? I'm really excited to find out.
Okay, well, to start off with, I never met Elvis. I never saw him in person or anything like that. I was 9 years old when he passed away. But I have been a lifelong Elvis fan, starting at age 5 or 6, mm-hmm. and I've read and studied just about everything you can get your hands on about the man, and become friends over the years with a lot of people that, like I said, the Memphis Mafia, which was his entourage. And everybody has an entourage now, and Elvis was kind of the forerunner of that, to have his own entourage. And band members, family members, friends, other performers, authors, everything. And I've been doing local shows, nationally syndicated programs, consulting on projects, just about anything that has to do with Elvis. And that's how Patrick Lacey and I also met years ago. Mm-hmm. was through our connection with Elvis. And so it's really fun to be back on a show with Patrick as well, and you'll be amazed by his information and insight and all the exhaustive work that he's done over the years when it comes to Elvis Presley.
Let me see if Patrick's ready to come on board. Hello, Patrick?
I am here.
Hi, how are you? This is Patrick Lacey. I'm so happy to have you, Patrick.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And again, Patrick's book, Elvis Decoded, A Fan's Guide to Deciphering the Myths and Misinformation. And that actually is on the homepage of Blog Talk Radio. And it's in today's picks on the right side of www.blogtalkradio.com. It's scrolling by, and I love the picture, the cover of the book. So, Patrick, maybe can you give us a little bit about your background? What got you going in this?
I actually was not an Elvis fan when I was a child or when he died. I remember when he died, but it wasn't – I knew it was a big news event, but it didn't really hit me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1994, a friend of mine, well, I was talking to him about our vacation plans, and he said, you know, you should go to Memphis. And I said, well, that sounds like kind of a nutty idea. I'll do that. So we packed up, and we went to Memphis, and we were driving down the road. We got into Memphis about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and we were driving south on Elvis Presley Boulevard, and on the right you pass the Lisa Marie, which was Elvis's airplane. And then on the left, you pass the mansion. And something in that 100 yards hit me. And from that moment on, I've been doing what I do pretty much every day and what Corey does every day. And something clicked in me, and that's really, I can't explain it. It just clicked.
It just clicked. But you wrote the book. I mean, this book, you must have done a lot of research and talked to his family and gone back to
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people. I started the research kind of by accident when I was, I was in my first year or two of reading about Elvis, which I started that weekend when I was down there, and I noticed that there's so much information about him out there, but there's a lot of information that doesn't mesh with a lot of other information. A lot of books will tell you one story, and then you'll pick up a couple other books, and they'll tell the same story, but with various details that are different.
Yeah.
And then you get into the topics like his death and things like that, where the information is just all over the map, and it's extremely difficult to understand and figure out what's right, what's wrong, what's truthful, what's not truthful, and the reasons behind all of that. You know, there has to be a reason why something is not truthful or not accurate. And so I just started compiling notes back then. This is 1995, 1996. And my notebook of keeping these notes and talking to various people kind of became the book. And pretty soon I had an outline of, you know, several hundred pages. And I said, well, I guess this is going to be a book. And so I just pursued it that way.
Wow. So it kind of came after you. You know, you're absolutely right. I've had a couple of emails from people that are telling me this and that about Elvis. And I'm kind of going, ooh. You know, there are huge variances between what people think he was or did or you know, so I can understand that we need to know actually the facts, what did happen, you know.
I agree, and a very important part to that, and Corey and I have talked about this a lot too.
Right.
Is that, you know, we're coming in, it's 2009 right now. Elvis died almost 32 years ago, and a lot of his contemporaries and his family and his friends are not going to be around much longer. And when those first-hand accounts are gone, we're going to be left with the body of work that is in the books and available resources. But when those people are gone, we're not going to be able to research this stuff very much anymore. So I think it's a really good time, although it's late, but it's a good time now to try to sort through all this stuff. And as Corey, you know, Corey is more of an Elvis historian than I am, and he'll tell you that he has to do the same thing with people that he talks to all the time, where even simple facts people don't get right.
Now, you know, we all know that he kind of shot to start. Well, I guess the colonel, his manager, was the major reason that he got to be where he was. I mean, without the colonel. And I don't know much about him. Do you know much about him?
Me or Corey?
Either one of.
Corey, you take that one.
All right.
Well, the Colonel Parker has been one of those figures in music history that's certainly unique. There's no other figure in music, I think, that can be anything compared to what Colonel Parker was and what he did. You know, he was a Dutch immigrant. He was in the United States illegally. His real name is not Tom Parker. His real name is Andreas von Kujik, and he was bestowed the honorary colonel title by a governor of Louisiana. And, you know, he was over here. He had been a dog catcher in Florida. He was a carnival worker. You know, he made his way around to eventually becoming the manager for Hank Snow and Eddie Arnold. And during that time is when he had heard about Elvis Presley, and he went and saw a show, and the rest is history, as they say. But he's just, you know, just a very controversial figure because of he did so much good for Elvis, but yet he did so many odd decision makings for Elvis, especially in the last few years. And but he was certainly a pivotal part in it all.
Yeah, I mean, Elvis himself probably wouldn't have been here without Colonel Parker. And what I heard was that Elvis really, I mean, he didn't push himself. That was totally the Colonel that got him out there.
Well, you know, I'm the one that believes that Elvis still would have been Elvis if it hadn't been for Colonel Parker.
I still believe
Elvis still would have been Elvis Presley because his talent, you know, outshines so much. I mean, it didn't take Colonel Parker for Elvis to be known, but it did take Colonel Parker to make the masses know as quickly as they did about Elvis Presley. I mean, Elvis was already had laid the groundwork and the foundation of his musical career was already going by the time that he and Colonel became the team that they were. And, you know, Elvis was already traveling around and had already been, you know, making records at Sun Records. But certainly the Colonel, when they made their relationship well known, as you know, it did certainly obviously help Elvis's career start up, you know, as fast as it did. But, you know, Elvis's talent still would have brought him to the forefront.
Was it true that they never had a contract that was only a handshake?
Well, certain things they did, but there was a contract. In fact, you know, Elvis's parents, Vernon and Gladys. Gladys was always very reluctant to have a contract with Colonel Parker. She didn't trust him as such, and there were certain things that they did with Colonel Parker. You know, they would have contracts, verbal agreements. There was a lot of stuff like that. I mean, Colonel Parker was very fastidious when it came to organizing what was going to be done and who was going to do what.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was the big boss and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I was kind of curious because you said, I think it was in your bio or something I read, that you were involved with the Memphis Mafia, but you were too young. Or you know them now as you're older.
No, I wasn't involved with them. I was not in their entourage or anything like that. I've formed relationships over the years with a lot of the members of the Memphis Mafia.
So you know some of the real facts, whereas most of us just read People magazine or whatever, and we hear it on the news, but you know the people. They tell you.
Well, exactly, and the same goes for Patrick as well. You know, we have formed relationships with people, like he was speaking of earlier, that have firsthand accounts of historical times and incidents that happened that we can go to people and we can confirm or have them deny instances and try to find out the real information. I mean, we both have, you know, an education on the subject, and we have arenas to go to confirm our facts. So when you speak with us or have questions and we give an answer, you know, if we don't know the answer, we know how to find the answer to confirm it. We're not just out there to throw out facts. And yeah, we have the resources and the people that were there that we can confirm what we speak about.
And most people don't. You know, we all kind of have our thoughts about why he did this, why he did that. We all know, for one thing, he had a beautiful voice that touched millions, billions of people, and will live on and on. Unfortunately, he left us quite young, and what I knew, he was on drugs or something, but you know, I really, none of that is real clear, and so that's why I thought, you know, if I have some people on the show that can give us some facts and let us know what really went on, what was it about Elvis that made him so vulnerable to actually taking whatever the drugs were that were offered him?
Well, you got to think of the time, too. I mean, Elvis came from a generation where he felt that a pill was going to be what cures every ail that you have. His usage, and you have to remember, too, it was prescribed legal medications that came from doctors. I mean, not that that necessarily makes the effects of what happened any less.
Right.
But, you know,
right.
Elvis was not out in the alleyway trying to score drugs. It wasn't like that, but you know, Elvis came from such a different generation. There wasn't all the Betty Ford clinics and rehab and knowledge, and there wasn't everything out there like it is now. And you know, and supposedly the story goes that Elvis got his taste in taking these medications when he would do post while he was in the military, and sadly, just over the years, it grew to the large extent that it became, and and Patrick would have a lot more, research into that matter to let you know of that dark period in his life.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about it, Patrick, I know when you were on our show before, we had many listeners that were very, very interested in what you had to say, because I think there's so many millions and billions of people that love his music, and yet, you know, he's gone, so we want to know more about him, and that's where y'all come in, because, you know, most of us, like Rita and I, we read People magazine or watch TV or watch Oprah, and we hear all the gossip. We don't really know, you know, the facts.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting angle there, is that a lot of people read about Elvis, and you know, when people write about Elvis, they kind of, a lot of people approach it as, well, I'm going to put something out there about Elvis, and he's got so many fans that somebody's going to read it, and, you know, maybe I'm going to put a book out about him, and I'm going to make some money. There's not a lot of tests or standards for Elvis information, and one of the reasons is because things have gotten so confusing that nobody seems to know what's right or wrong anymore. So yeah. when you write something, you're not going to get a lot of people calling you on it if you're wrong. That's kind of what I've tried to do, is not only call them out when I see something wrong, but when other people are talking about it, say, well, hey, wait a minute. Don't just take that, you know, verbatim as fact or truth. Mm-hmm. Do your own research. If you don't believe me, or if you contact Corey and you don't believe him, do your own research. And a lot of people, I don't mean to speak down to a lot of Elvis fans.
No.
A lot of Elvis fans don't want to do the research. They want the answers handed to them. And if they don't like the answers, then they tell you you're wrong.
Yeah, because I actually had, I think it was on Facebook, and someone mentioned that you had all these answers, but the truth was that Elvis was on heroin and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know what? I'm really not here for that, but I will ask you, was he a heroin addict?
Absolutely not. And
not.
Absolutely not. Whoever would say something like that is making it up. Because
making
not,
it up.
There's not
That's
even
what
any,
I thought.
There's not even any anecdotal evidence to point towards heroin. Even
none.
Not addiction or usage. He was taking prescription medication. You could go back over the 1960s, maybe even going into the 50s, and maybe he tried a drug here and there, as a lot of people did back then. It was part of popular culture then. But he was addicted in a clinical definition, and he was addicted physically, and he was addicted psychologically to these medications. He was beyond the point where he was concerned about what they were doing for him. He just thought that he needed them. And there's one thing a lot of people don't realize about Elvis, is he was in a very, very unique position in our history. And he is a unique persona and person, and he is defined by himself. There is no definition outside of him that can apply to him.
No.
He defines himself. And from a psychological standpoint, he was in a position that nobody else can really comment on. You know, it was almost like a Howard Hughes type of situation.
Yeah.
Where somebody's psychology and position in life is so unique that you really can't understand what they go through. And when people criticize Elvis, you know, he was a drug addict, he ate too much and all this kind of stuff,
yeah,
it's really, really unfair, because you have to look at the person that you're talking about and say, can you justify the way this man was behaving? And in large part, I'm not justifying drug abuse, but in large
right.
part, you can justify the decisions that he made because he was in such a position.
That's very well. You know, we're going to take a short break, and I'm going to play Rita Graham's Bring Me My Gin by Bessie Smith. And then we're going to play a little bit of an Elvis song, and I'll be right back with you.
This comes from Bessie Smith. Back in the day before the United States government said that you could consume alcohol, they said you could not consume alcohol. They said you couldn't make it, but people made it anyway. They made it. They made it in the backwoods. They made it in the kitchen sink.
Got to say, bring me my gin. Wow. So Rita, working with Ray Charles, and we're talking about Elvis Presley, two geniuses. I've got to say, I'm really honored to have all of you on the show, Judy Joy Jones Show. And Rita, did you have any questions that you'd like to ask these two guys?
Well, I was working in Vegas, in Las Vegas. I was at the Flamingo Hilton. It was at the Desert Inn, I'm sorry, with Harry James, when
mm-hmm.
Elvis was still alive and was still working in Las Vegas. And he would tie up traffic. I mean, it was just amazing. There would be absolutely no way you could get down Las Vegas Boulevard if he was in town. So, you know, I heard all the rumors and
yeah.
I heard, you know, all the gossip and all the things that that was said about him, but from the Sweet Inspirations in the girls that I heard various things from, they always said that he was a very sweet and very gentle spirit.
Yeah.
And that he was very generous and just really kind, but I know it upset Ray Charles and a lot of the old blues guys a lot, because a lot of the people that had originated those blues and those forms that he used, they
mm-hmm.
never got paid like that. So there was a great deal of resentment about that. Hey, hold it, you know.
That's like a six-hour show there, Rita.
Yeah, but really, it was a thing that a lot of people thought, oh, my goodness, you know, here comes this kid from, you know, Mississippi, and
right.
he makes all the money that
nobody else could make. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, because he was gorgeous.
He
and,
was.
You know, women would just fall out. And,
they would.
Yeah, and I mean, they just fall out. I saw him walk down the hall one night, and I just saw the back of him. And oh man, I mean, it was terrible. It was the crowd and the press and the bus, and I was with my buddy, and I was asking her, why did we come in this casino in the first place? Well, we didn't have any business in here. Because there was such a crush of people and so much adoration and all of that. You know, he had the magic.
Yeah, he had that thing. And I read in a book that he told someone that he couldn't understand how he got so famous, that at the end of his life he was absolutely perplexed. How did this happen to me? And I thought, you know, because he had a beautiful voice, but, you know, a lot of people do, but he had the right timing, right? You know, he was there.
I think Elvis may have, part of what you may be touching on here is I think that he spent a lot of time trying to find some spiritual meaning to what he did and
mm-hmm.
spiritual meaning to life in general and to his own
mm-hmm.
life. And I think that he looked at his success kind of as an outsider and he wondered, you know, why me? You
mm-hmm.
know, why did I get this incredible amount of success?
Yep.
You know, he gave props to all the artists that he worked with. He spoke in glowing terms of so many of them.
He
didn't like the fact that he, you know, made all that money, and a lot of people didn't. A lot of people felt shortchanged. But I think that he may have been perplexed at what he saw was happening to him, and I think that spanned his career probably from, I don't know, 55 or 56 on. And it may have also gone back, if we want to really delve into the psychology, is he mm. is a twinless twin, and his twin brother died in the womb and was stillborn. And I think Elvis may have also, you know, had survivor guilt, where he went through his life and he reached, you know, the plateaus that he reached, and knowing that his deceased sibling wasn't there with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that might have been another reason why he questioned what happened to him. And why he was given so many great things in life and that type of thing.
And why him and not his twin.
Yeah, why him and why not
yeah.
somebody else?
Yeah, that's an amazing thought. Because, you know, he must have felt like, you know, guilty or you know, well, I guess he really was rather naive and innocent, and he just had a great voice. Colonel Parker came along at the time when Elvis was meant to be. And, you know, for the guy, I really feel for him because I think had he lived longer, that he would have been able to kind of perceive more what went on. But the way he left so young, it was like we're all wanting more. You know, I hear these myths. He's alive. I mean, I got to ask. I know you, yeah, but... What about? I can't help it. Is he alive? Where is he?
I got some bad news for you. He is not alive.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh.
No, those things started up, you know, nearly 30 years ago. Those stories.
Yeah.
And they've been going ever since.
Oh yeah.
They're fueled by. They used to be fueled by tabloids, and they're really not anymore. They're fueled more by what is popularly known in Elvis world as the Elvis Underground.
Oh.
And those are people who take these tangentially connected claims and stories
mm-hmm.
and such. They try
mm-hmm.
to weave them together into this mosaic and this narrative
mm-hmm.
that shows us that, hey, look at all these really interesting things. This means that Elvis is alive.
Right.
They say, well, the middle name on his grave is misspelled. Therefore, that's Elvis telling us that he's really not there. These Elvis sightings, you know, you've got the claims that he was an FBI agent. He was testifying
yeah.
in a case, and therefore he had to escape the public. You've got all these different stories, and they weave them together. But as you and I were talking about on the last show,
right.
All of these pieces of information, each individual piece, has a probative weight of zero. There's no value to each piece of evidence. But what the people who support these theories want you to believe is that when you add all these things up
mm-hmm.
together, you've got, you know, some weight to the evidence. But that's not true, because when you add zero to zero to zero, you've got zero.
Yeah,
and that's the trick that kind of gets people to believing it as well. It's not just this one thing that's really kind of weird. It's 10 things, and therefore 10 means I'm going to maybe believe he's alive. But it's a trick to get people to believe that.
Well, we love him. There was one impersonator that I saw. His manager was a woman. They were somewhere. They were from someplace in the Midwest, and they were in Las Vegas because she was looking for background singers. She was looking for Sweet Inspirations, you know, to back him up. And he came through the room, and this kid was, and he was uncanny. Mm. I've seen a lot of Elvis impersonators, mm-hmm. but this one was, I don't know what his name is, but I should have written it down at that time because I couldn't do it. There were a lot of girls over there they were listening to that day. But he looked like Elvis. And he carried himself like Elvis, and he had that voice and every, I mean he was uncanny. And I've seen about 50 of them,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if either one of you guys know the one I'm talking about, who was so much like Elvis that it was just amazing. Usually
I wouldn't know, Rita. I mean, there's so many of them out there, and there is a handful that can do a pretty good job. The best vocally I've ever heard is a man named Doug Church. He's from the Midwest, and he's been doing it for a long time. But that man's vocals are incredible. I don't think there's anybody that can get that tone or the enunciation down as well as Doug Church does.
Mm-hmm. Does he look like Elvis?
He looks like an older Elvis, you know, like the late 60s through the 70s of Elvis. You know, and Doug is you know, an older man himself now, but you know, but he's got the mannerisms down, eye movements, finger movements, the stage presence, you know, and the confidence in it. But that voice is just incredible. So
that might have been him because she said that he was the closest impersonator, and Elvis was still alive. And so this was years ago. Mm-hmm. This was like 75, you know, 74.
Okay, yeah. Well, this wouldn't be Doug then because he's not that old.
That's not that old now,
because this he was a young man.
Well, I mean, but Doug would have only been like, you know, 12 years old in the mid-70s, so it wouldn't be him.
Oh, really?
Well.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Oh, okay. Because so many people.
That's amazing.
I was going to say, though, getting back to the alive rumors and the constant flow of this misinformation that we read and hear about all the time is one reason why not only is Patrick a fan of his because of the work that he did for his book, Elvis Decoded. I mean, anybody that either side, whether they believe Elvis is alive or they don't believe Elvis is alive, they should read Elvis Decoded because Patrick has laid out this information for you to read it in such a way that it explains why there's been so many stories that are wrong and why this information may have been out there as saying it's fact when it's not fact and why it's so confusing and how it might have happened to begin with. He lays this out. And the thing that Patrick and I go through all the time that's so frustrating for us is even when there's always the numerous stories you hear, like, you know, like his middle name is misspelled or, you know, these stories that go on forever. I mean, even when they're proven to be false to the people that still think it's true, they still will argue the point with you and still go on about how, no, it's still true because of this. But they don't ever have the information to back up what they claim. So I encourage anybody, if you want to know how a lot of this may have been started and the reasons behind it or how from a simple fact became this giant mystery so-called for the people that believe these stories, read Elvis Decoded. It'll help explain to you why this may have came about.
Why it may have happened. And, you know, someone like Elvis, you know, it's kind of like Ray Charles. We love these people so much, we don't want them to be dead. I mean, you know, it's like they can't be. We won't let them go, and we're going to find any way possible. But we do need to know the facts. And for me to think I'm going to walk around the corner and see Ray Charles perform live, you know, I got to know he's not going to be there.
Judy, you bring up an interesting point there, too.
Yeah. I'll
just touch on that really quickly. When somebody comes to me and says, I believe Elvis is alive, and here's why.
Yeah.
As Corey just mentioned, they never have any evidence of their own. And I've come to accept that. I know that they're not going to have any evidence because the evidence isn't there. But what's interesting, though, is that there, you just said that a lot of people don't want him to have died, and they want somehow to keep him alive, even if it's in a psychological way. I personally don't believe, though, that what these people do is to keep Elvis alive. It's feeding something in their own psychology that drives them to do this. And it could be Elvis, and it could be Kurt Cobain, and it could be Jimi Hendrix, and it could be anybody else. Now, they've attached themselves to Elvis in this psychological world that they've created.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that it's that they're doing this to keep Elvis alive. I think they're doing it to feed something in themselves that needs to be fed. And that's a big psychological thing there, and I can't say that I've worked it out. But just my gut feeling on what I hear from these people, and they contact me all the time with this stuff, is it's not Elvis that they want to be alive. It's there's some void in their life that they're trying to fill, and Elvis is the filling.
Well, the reason why I brought up that impersonator is because if anybody saw him at any age, in the supermarket, and then, like my kid says, the inconvenience store, and just see this guy walking down the street or in a passing car, it would keep that myth alive because he was uncanny. He was stunning.
Well,
like I said, I don't know his name, but you know, and just see him across the room somewhere, you go, oh my God, you know.
That's Elvis.
So so that's why I thought about that because. Actually, like I said, I've seen a bunch of them because I worked in Las Vegas for about 6 years, and there were a ton of them. You know, they were all over the place. And then ever since then, you know, state fairs and trade shows and things.
Yeah.
I've met a lot of them. I work with an Elvis impersonator right now who's very good. So, you know, I know what I'm talking about. This guy is really astounding. So if wherever he went, in his life, I'm sure he perpetuated that myth because he was so much like him.
Amazing. Because, you know, you don't really see other entertainers that have these impersonating. I had a call, actually an email from someone that worked with Elvis, or so he says he did, and he was going to kind of like demyth everything y'all had to say tonight. And, you know, I mean, Elvis... It is so amazing to me that the people around are just willing to step in and say, no, this is wrong. They have this kind of, psychological hold on him. And
well, Judy, here's a perfect example of how, when you really think about it, how it doesn't make any sense. You have the people that want to believe Elvis is alive.
Right.
And their example is part of some of their example will be that he needed to get away for his own safety because he was working for the government. So in that essence, whenever you see these people that say, well, I have a picture of Elvis, he's this or that, and you see the picture and it's somebody that's dressed like Elvis with sideburns and the hair like Elvis would have it. Now, that's hypocritical of what they're claiming. Now, if Elvis went into hiding to protect himself, would he be out there looking like Elvis? So even their own arguments don't make sense.
Don't make sense. We just won't let him go. I mean, it is so weird. You know, I thought to myself, you know, I love Elvis Presley, and I thought his voice was absolutely gorgeous, but, you know, I wasn't absolutely taken. I'm not a fan-type personality, but on the other hand, I thought there are people out there that need to know certain things to let go, maybe. And it just let his music live on. It was so incredible.
Well, you kind of touched again there on what Corey and I said a little while ago, is that when you have somebody who says, I believe Elvis faked his death, here's why, and then you dispute and knock down every single one of the things they say, it doesn't matter what you say to them. They're going to continue to believe it. And I've had people contact me over the past 10, 12 years who will say the same thing over and over and over to me, and I'll keep saying the same thing back to them, and it doesn't matter what evidence I show them, they will not change their mind.
That's it.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what
fact.
I tell them.
Mm-hmm. Judy, here's a fact, too. Patrick and I...
People believe that wrestling is real, too. You know, those are the same folks that, oh, yeah, I saw him. He just knocked him out of the ring. Those are the same people.
You know, Judy... Patrick and I get questions all the time. I mean, as you do too. But one question that Patrick and I get from time to time, and we sit there and just go, you know, what the heck? This is so I mean, 5 seconds on a Google search, you could find the facts of this information, but people still want to use this as a claim
right.
to say that Elvis is still alive. And one of them is the fact, you'll hear people, and they'll ask us, and say, mm-hmm. well, Elvis passed away on the same day, the same month, and the same mm-hmm. age as his mother. Now, that's absolutely not true.
Not true.
I mean, they passed away in the same month, but his
mm-hmm.
mother passed away August 14th. 1958.
Mm-hmm.
She was 46 years old. Elvis passed away
wow.
August 16th, and he was 42 years old.
Oh
but
my.
People will say, nope, they passed away. They were both 42 years old, and it must mean something. It must mean that Elvis knew that was the day he was going to pick to fake his death. Now, you can go back and factually show these people records and say, you're wrong, and here's why. But like Patrick
right.
said, they still will not believe you. Even when shown the facts, they will not believe you. They have a tendency to believe the outrageous, but will not believe fact. And that's the psychological experiment that is just mind-boggling at times when it comes to the people that want to believe these type stories.
And keep on believing. And, you know, Lisa Marie, his daughter, who is really absolutely an excellent, have you heard her, Rita? She can sing and she's great. And I just feel like she has got to be inundated with all these people that think that her father's still living somewhere, you know, and she's probably going, whoa, man, he's been dead a long time. But, you know, and I really appreciate you all being on my show. I'm going to bring you back on, but I want to do Heartbreak Hotel by Elvis Presley, and then I'm going to come right back.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of the lonely street, that Heartbreak Hotel. I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just a lonely, I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. Be so, I'll be just a lonely baby. I'll be just a lonely, I'll be so lonely, I'll make it die. Man, the bellhop's tears keep flowing, the death clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long on the street, we'll never. Never look back and think you're so, think you're so lonely, baby. Well, you're so lonely. Well, you're so lonely, and they could die. Well, if your baby leaves you, you've got a tale to tell. Well, just take a walk down the lonely street to Heartbreak Hotel, where you will be. Well, you think you're so lonely, baby. Well, you will be lonely. You'll
leave
so lonely, you could die.
Yeah.
Well, since
my he's not going to quit. But I really feel like, you know, maybe you, Corey, and you, Patrick, are here to help us let go or actually go on and see the reality that if we're waiting for Elvis to return or be here, it may not happen.
Well, sadly, that's not. He lives on in spirit and in memory and in our hearts, but sadly, he's not going to be here in physical form.
Not in physical. And both of you have been to his grave, I would take it, and in Memphis.
Numerous times, yes.
Yeah. And so, really, what we're trying to hold on to, but what amazes me, it's like Jim Morrison. Everyone wants to believe he's still alive in Paris. There are certain performers, entertainers, and people in our world that we just don't see them as gone, which, you know, it's interesting. I'm sure you have the...
Because, mm-hmm. You know why part of it, I think, is in my theory, is that
mm-hmm.
there was a certain mystery to
mm-hmm.
these people. There was a mystique. There wasn't, you know, the 6,000 different media outlets that we have now. There wasn't shows dedicated to... every single day, nothing but celebrities and performers. there, you know, and with Elvis, you didn't see Elvis on Johnny Carson, and you didn't see him on Merv Douglas.
No.
And, I mean, Mike Douglas and Merv Griffin.
Mike Douglas.
You didn't see him on these shows because Colonel Parker didn't want Elvis to appear on these shows because it would make him like everybody else, which perpetuated the mystique and people to crave more. And that's one reason why Colonel Parker did that. You know, and when you have these older performers, with Jim Morrison and Elvis and Janis Joplin and Bruce Lee and these different performers that passed away at young ages, it instantly solidifies a legendary status that makes people more curious. And and that's what happens.
Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, just on a very brief note on that, Elvis now is in large part defined by the fact that he did die. Because nobody can say what would have happened after August 77 if he hadn't. For all we know, he would have faded away and you know, lived out his life on a farm somewhere. You know, we don't know what would have happened. But what we do know is that Elvis, the performer that everybody loves today, died on a certain day. And then after that, you know, his post-life life was born, and it took off on a life of its own.
Yeah.
He is defined, his popularity is defined now by the fact that he died. And I don't think anybody can dispute that.
So that weekend that he died, I was signed to Tom Jones' label was MAM Records. Gordon Mills that wrote It's Not Unusual. They had brought their label to the United States, called it Brittany West, their studios and everything in the Old Coinga Pass, really, was where they were located. And Johnny Spence was Tom's music director, and he was my producer.
Huh.
And they couldn't tell Tom that Elvis was gone.
Uh-huh.
They wanted him to finish. Yeah, they wanted him to finish the date, finish out the weekend, I guess. I don't know what day of the week it was. I'm trying to remember now.
It was a Tuesday.
Was it a Tuesday? They wanted him to finish out the weekend before they let him know that that Elvis was gone. And because he they were friends, and he just would have a fit. He had a fit as it was, you know. Everybody was just so, the people who knew him were just devastated. I remember that. Yeah, it was.
And yet, so many of the people who perpetuate the myth that Elvis faked his death believe that he would have done that to his friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know
that's weird. Why would he do that?
Think of how many people he hurt that day if he faked his death. Just think of the number. Not only the millions of fans, you know, who he didn't know personally, but the example that Rita just gave is a perfect example. Tom Jones, you know, would he have done that to all these people? And if he did, why do we love the guy so much? Because he'd be pretty darn cruel, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Elvis would like to be out there performing. A performer doesn't want to be back in the back room, right, Rita?
Yeah.
he was my favorite record of all. One of my favorite records of all time is Memories.
That's fantastic. That is one of the most sweet, mellow, loving, just the way the song, the way he sings that, it's just so beautiful.
Chilling, just gives me chills. It's just one of my favorite things of, you know, like I have about 30 favorite records, and that's one of them. It's just, I absolutely love that song, and I love the way he sang it. But, you know, I had Elvis Live, I had an album where he opened with I Just Can't Help Believing.
Right.
That stuff was all, that was on fire. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. That was really
he's amazing. You know, we don't want him to die. I remember Elvis as being the pivotal point in my life from, I guess, Puritan to Bohemian or whatever. I mean, he let it loose. He let it go. And we all were shocked, but it changed our lives. And it's like Janis Joplin, although people don't try to keep her alive quite like Elvis. I've never seen anything like this, you know, where people really claim that they see him and he is not dead and blah, 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 which amazes me. I'm going, what? You know, I think that we need to let go and enjoy what he was or is, and I guess that's where you two guys come into play because you're kind of giving us the facts.
Well, something that one of them just said, though, they see a guy that has a dress like Elvis with the sideburns, and that is convincing enough. They believe
that's true.
Yeah, that gets them. And then if they see somebody who looks just like them,
like him, I know.
Just like him, then that's really uncanny. You know,
very few people, I think. Today, now this may have been true 25 years ago, but I think that today, the people who believe that Elvis faked his death tend to lean towards these more cryptic, ambiguous type things that could be interpreted any number of ways.
Uh-huh.
They interpret them the way they want the information to be, and then they say that Elvis faked his death. Elvis sightings, as we now know they're called, really don't happen anymore that I'm aware of. Maybe Corey's heard of some. But, But yeah,
Patrick's right. I was going to say Patrick's right on it because it seems to me that, you know, usually what we get questions on now is people that want to reiterate some old story that they've heard of a sighting and want to try to get it confirmed through asking us about it. And there doesn't really tend to be anything new. It's like what people have done now is they've seemed to, a lot of the focus now is that they want to say, well, we've known this person so-and-so, and they say they're Elvis's son, or they say they're Elvis's daughter. And now that's become like the new genre of claims now is the long-lost son or daughter stories or some other outrageous claim. It's like it morphs into something else when the other old story doesn't seem to generate the attention anymore.
All the stories now are DNA-based. You've got various DNA claims because the other stuff didn't work. But what's odd, though, is they still cling to that, too. So it's now just they're trying to make the pile bigger.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, a lot of that went on in Ray Charles' life, you know, the DNA and all the...
Well, they had to have that, because those blues guys that were on the Chitlin Circuit for so many years, singing the blues and taking a bus down through the southern part of the United States, the southeast part of the United States, they just picked up girlfriends all along the way.
Well, yeah.
And something an attorney friend of mine up in Asheville said, Gene Ellison said, well, you know, Rita, he says, well, just think about it. He said, here are these guys. That was B.B. King and James Brown and Ray Charles and a lot of the Motown people too, but it didn't get out in the press as big, you know, because they weren't as big. They didn't do this they caught the tail end of this where these people had been doing those tours for 10, 15 years before Motown came along. And
what a beautiful time Rita had. What a beautiful time Rita to be in the music, because you were in the time of music when people actually had to have talent and everything wasn't overproduced and overdubbed and filled in later in a production studio. I mean, you had to know your craft and know what you were doing.
You had to be able to sing. My Vibrations album with Ray Charles is live. That's why I recorded the live CD at Sambuca, because it just seemed natural to me to translate what I do right straight out of my microphone out to people, as opposed to being filtered down through all those, you know, those things that bring the, if the singer's out of tune, they can they can make that note that goes, can they break this up and get it in tune and everything. But these guys were going through the South, and they were groupies everywhere, and these girls didn't, you know, they wanted some of that gold dust. And so the DNA stuff came about because they would gladly have babies to be a part of all that. So B.B. King has 15 kids or something. Ray Charles had 12 from different parts of the world. They had
all... Well, that's the thing now with these DNA claims. You know, it's great for anybody to throw out that they have DNA proof, but the thing that people do, they just hear that and they think, oh, my gosh, it's true, but they don't understand how DNA works, and they throw that out knowing people are going to be so taken back by that because they know they're not, the general public doesn't understand what that all means. So they're going to, you know, that's going to make their claim more true, they think, by making these claims. But the fact remains, DNA means absolutely nothing if you cannot prove where the samples came from for the DNA.
That's right.
That's right. But all these famous people, and, you know, I really believe that, like Elvis or Ray Charles or any of the great geniuses of our time, that everyone that can latch on to them in any way. But Rita actually, you know, Ray Charles produced her first album, and you were like 21 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not just, you know, I mean, it's like there are people that actually were connected to these great people. And that's why I'm so glad you guys are on tonight, so you can kind of dismiss those myths of all the people that say, no, no, no. And I had the letter from the guy. He said, well, he's on heroin, and I need to let you know. And I'm going, uh-oh, what am I going to do? You know, well, I didn't know he was on heroin. You know?
We can empathize and sympathize with you when you receive emails or correspondence with questions like that. And I think I can speak for Patrick when I say this, too. This is a big reason why we are proponents of getting the truth out there and be able to answer questions with fact, because we feel that when people do this, it takes away from what Elvis Presley really was. And that starts making it, you know, it twists people's view of what Elvis was really about, because there's so much garbage out there that is not true, that it takes away from what is true.
Well, you
and,
know, all,
and that's a big reason why we do this.
Yeah. Also,
yeah,
when you've got the people who perpetuate the myth that Elvis faked his death, often tout themselves as the biggest Elvis fans out there, and they think that by saying Elvis is alive and he faked his death and he's okay now and all this stuff, that they're doing a favor for Elvis and they're somehow being loyal to him and they love him so much. But in fact, when you go out there in public and you say Elvis Presley faked his death and I have evidence, you're not only making a fool of yourself, you're making a fool of him. And you're hurting his family. You know, this is 32 years since he's died. Let's give it 25 or so since all this Elvis is alive stuff happened. The people who are saying this claim to be loyal to him, and yet they insult him, they insult themselves, and they insult his family by saying this stuff year after year after year. My position in this, and Corey may agree with this too, is if you've got the evidence, show it. If you don't, stop making the claim.
Right.
And these people never have the evidence because it never existed to begin with. The whole concept that Elvis faked his death is so, it's just not feasible. When you just take the simple fact of how many people it would have taken to pull off such a stunt, from medical personnel and doctors and police and people at the funeral homes. I mean, it goes all against all conventional wisdom to think that after all this time there would not be somebody coming forward with proof to say, yeah, this did happen. I mean, it's not feasible. That's why I was saying about the people tend to believe the outrageous and not the fact, and they don't take into consideration things like this. And you also have the most famous entertainer in the history of entertainment whose life has been gone over a million times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, anybody can try to twist whatever they want to twist into a different story, you know, and that's what happens here. But when they're presented with fact, or they're presented with the question, okay, show me, there's nothing there.
They actually frame the debate in such a way that they – I have people all the time tell me that I need to prove that Elvis died. And I respond with, you know, the entire body of evidence – clearly indicates this, and that evidence is voluminous. It's far beyond any legal standard that would prove that Elvis died. But if they don't believe me, then they say, well, I don't believe you, therefore it's still an open question. And I go back to them, I say, no, it's not an open question. I've given you the evidence, you've refused the evidence, but that doesn't invalidate the evidence. And they don't care.
Exactly.
They do not care.
The burden of proof is on them. The burden of proof is not on the people who say Elvis passed away.
No, no. And his daughter, I'm sure, you know, she would come up and say something about my father is not
well,
really.
Well, that's another problem with this, and I'm not going to sit here and criticize his estate by any means, but they take a very, very passive role in this. And part of the reason they do is that they feel that if they say, if they respond to one thing, they're going to have to respond to everything. Or if one person makes a DNA claim and they respond to that, well, then every person who makes a DNA claim, they're going to have to respond to.
Mm-hmm.
So their approach is to just say nothing and let it go. However, their silence tells a lot of these weaker-minded people who are susceptible to these types of beliefs that, hey, well, the estate doesn't say it's not true, therefore it's possible, which is an illogical thread, but that's what they do. And the estate doesn't seem to mind that this stuff continues.
There's a subject out there right now.
But wouldn't you agree that it's died down in comparison to the way that it was? I mean, in the 80s and 90s, it was astounding. I mean, every time I picked up a tabloid, they would have Elvis sightings and all kinds of things. And I mean, they rode that crest of that wave for the longest time.
Certainly did. Rita is so correct on that. But that's why I was saying earlier how it seems to, those are still out there, but it seems to have morphed into these other claims now with the long-lost sons or daughters or some other outrageous claim. I mean, there's a subject right now that's got a case out there saying that she is now the daughter of Vernon Presley, which was Elvis's father. You know, so now it's just, you know, every few years there becomes some new angle on an old twist of the outrageous.
Right. I mean, 25 years ago, there was a goofy charm to seeing a tabloid that said, you know, Elvis is alive or Elvis lives on Mars or any kind of that kind of stuff. But now you've got people who are really taking this stuff far beyond where it should be. You've got, you know, cases coming into the courts in Memphis now, and yet there's still no evidence.
No evidence. What in the world? You know, it's
but
crazy.
But Judy, the perfect fact about that, though, is that the people that want to believe the outrageous will say, well, if there was nothing about it that's true, then why would it go to a court case to where it's on the news and it's going through the system? Well, see, but that takes away from what the true facts are. Just because, I mean, people can make outrageous false claims all the time, but just because they do doesn't mean it's not going to have to move through the system of justice to be shown that it's frivolous or thrown out. But people will say, well, my gosh, it's there, so it's got to be true. What was the claim a while back about F. Lee Bailey, Patrick? Remember that one? And everybody said, oh, my gosh, it must be true because there's a docket number for the case, so it must be true. They don't do any research.
Yeah, there was a claim, I think it came out of Australia, oddly enough, where they said that F. Lee Bailey had represented somebody. They were charging that I think the grave was empty or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And they cited a docket number from the Memphis courts and all this kind of stuff. And when people see that official looking information, they're thinking, you know, oh my God, F. Lee Bailey's on the case. F. Lee Bailey was contacted about this. He knew absolutely nothing about it, and there's no such docket number. So that's how things get into the public domain and then into the Elvis world, and then they circulate and nobody does anything about them. And then they become fact.
Yeah. And, you know, people believe this absolutely. You know, Facebook is an amazing place. They have fan clubs, and I know a lot of people know reality, but there's a lot of people that have contacted me that really believe that he is alive and out there. And it's almost like, I can't.
This is
on Facebook?
Yeah.
Did you say Facebook?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Judy?
Uh-huh.
Judy, invite him on your show with the evidence.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, come on. Let us see what you're talking about, because they got to have something to prove it. They saw Elvis. Okay, where? When? How? You know?
And then direct them to read Elvis Decoded.
Yeah, really. And where can, okay, that's a good, great thing to talk about now. Where can we get your book?
You can go to elvisdecoded.com, and there is a link to the publisher website and a link to Amazon there. And I believe it's also available on barnesandnoble.com and other major retailers online.
Okay, and this gives us the facts and everything we need to know about Elvis and why we have to let go, right?
My book isn't solely about the you know, debunking the Elvis is Alive
claims.
I go into a lot of, you know, just basic information about Elvis that seems to have become confusing and misleading over the years. But yeah, that's what I touch on in the book, and is I go
right.
into a lot of the Elvis is Alive stuff.
What's the great thing about it, Judy, is mm-hmm. like this. I mean, you know, you can have, like Patrick will show in the book how
mm-hmm.
there were certain events in Elvis's life where there might have been 10 people that were at the same exact event, and
mm-hmm.
all 10 of those people will have a different story of the event that actually did happen.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick will explain to you why that might be, you know, and how it can get confusing like that.
Sure.
That's what's one of the many great aspects of Elvis Decoded.
And
yeah, the purpose of my book, if I could just interject, is and a lot of people, some people who don't agree with me or they think Elvis is Alive write to me and say, you know, you don't know all this, you know, you're
mm-hmm.
just, you're flapping your gums and all this stuff. But
right.
one of the main reasons, and I explain this in the book, is I don't want people to just take any claim as fact. Do
mm-hmm.
your research. Think about what you're being told. When you pick up an Elvis book and you open it and you're reading it and something doesn't make sense to you, or you've heard different information, then go get that other book and look it up. And then find, you know, if you're really interested in it, contact the author. And if the author can't answer you, find one of Elvis's friends. Contact me or Corey. Do something. Don't just accept the information if you think it's wrong. And that's what I want people to do. I want people to think. You don't have to agree with me, but think about what you're reading.
Sounds good.
And if anybody wants to contact me, I'll let Patrick, of course, give out his own information. But I'm on AOL. And they can reach me at my screen name and email is ElvisExpert@AOL.com. ElvisExpert@AOL.com.
Thank you, because I couldn't find a website. Actually, it said it was in progress. And so go ahead and give your email again.
It's ElvisExpert@AOL.com.
AOL.
And I welcome any and all questions. And this is what Patrick and I do. We've somehow been, in a way,
mm-hmm.
kind of thrust into the forefront of being what we've been doing lately. And we want to help these people. I mean, that's the thing, too. We're big Elvis fans, too. And if we can help other fans or people that have questions and give them the correct information, then we're doing a service back to Elvis and his memory for us being the fans that we are of him.
Absolutely. And I want to tell everyone that tonight we are so blessed to have Rita Graham, who actually was a Ray Charles Raylett, and Ray Charles made her or produced her first album. And she is actually going to be on our show next week, and we're going to play her album at the one that she did at this live at Sambuca. Cafe or restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia. We haven't set the date or the time, but Rita, you're wonderful, and I'm so proud and so happy that you came here tonight.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it immensely. I really did. I enjoyed listening to Corey and Patrick. It was just great stuff.
Yeah.
And the same with you, Rita. I'm such a big fan of what you do, and my mom was an entertainer for years and played piano and sang, and so when I hear these stories and to be able to hear you talk about your life experiences and your music career, it brings back great memories for me. So I thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Where was your mom working? Did she work in California?
Oh, she worked everywhere in the United States for 50 years.
Really? What was
she worked.
Name?
She worked with probably a lot of the same people you worked with. She worked with Pete Fountain and Tennessee Ernie Ford and Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys and.
Wow.
And even Louis Armstrong. She was on the same stage with Louis Armstrong. And
what's her name?
Dizzy Gillespie. Her name, her stage name was Melba Lynn. Her real name, they called her the Red Hot, last of the Red Hot Mamas, and Melba Lynn was her stage name.
I've heard that.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Tennessee Ernie Ford, that deep, deep voice. Never forget that. What was it? Something tons, 264 tons. Yeah, that's amazing. 16
tons, what do you get? Another day older.
Another day older,
no deeper
in debt.
St. Peter, don't you call me because
I can't go.
I owe my soul to the company store.
You know that. Well, I want to tell everyone we're going to end the show with Elvis Presley. Actually, we're going to do Jailhouse Rock, and then we're going to have Rita singing Never Maybe You Move Too Soon. Is that right?
Never Make You Move Too Soon.
Never Make You Move Too Soon.
Check your lottery, check the lottery numbers before you pack up and leave.
Okay. Thank you, girl. I appreciate it. And
okay.
Thank you, Corey, and thank you, Patrick.
Well, thank you.
And
okay, thanks to both of you.
And best of luck. And here we go with Jailhouse Rock.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rita.
Back in the day before the United States government said that you could consume alcohol, they said you could not consume alcohol. They said you couldn't make it, but people made it anyway. They made it. They made it in the backwoods. They made it in the kitchen sink. Thank you. lobster, nothing like that, darling. Just give me some gin. Give me gin and say.